All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our weekly radio teleconference. Thanks again for joining us. This is budget week in the Senate. As you, I'm sure, know, every year the Senate and the House are supposed to establish a budget which sets the parameters for the appropriations process for the rest of the year. The president proposes a budget, but it is the Congress that actually adopts the budget, often working from the blueprint provided by the president, but almost always creating its own budget, never doing exactly what the president has recommended. And that's why we often end up with some serious conflict between the White House and the Congress over just what the budget should be and how it should be implemented. This year, we have a very, very difficult problem because the budget that has been proposed is not responsible, in my opinion, on either the spending front, the taxing front, or in the reform front. And what I mean by that is that the budget proposes significant new spending. It proposes or sets the stage for very, very significant new tax increases and does not do anything in terms of addressing the most significant spending pressure in the budget, which comes from the entitlement programs. And as a result of that, I'm very concerned that this budget will be returning us at an extremely fast pace to the standard tax and spend politics and policies of the past that have put us into such a dire situation in terms of our national debt. I hope that the entire country focuses on this debate in the Senate this week, because truly we are debating today or this week in the Senate the blueprint, if you will, for how Congress will approach the spending and tax policies for the next few years in our country. We also have a number of other significant issues that are at work in the committees, but I'll stop there and throw it open for questions. And Bill Scott, you're first on the list today. Is Bill with us? Uh-oh, I hope we didn't start without him. Let's go on to Leslie.
Good morning. We as citizens don't have the right to tax, but we're sure being spent. The gas prices in this rural community are just going out of sight. Grocery prices, hay prices. What does it take to get to a point that Congress will look at this as a national emergency?
Well, you know, with regard to the energy costs and increasingly the cost of food, we do have an understanding in Congress that this is an emergency. The problem is that we don't have an agreement in Congress as to how to deal with it. There is that continuous battle between the different philosophies of whether we should have more government, more regulation, and more taxes to deal with these kinds of issues, or whether we should rely on private sector solutions and reduce the federal spending. And so although there is a deep understanding of the nature of the issue and of the concern about rising energy prices, for example, or rising food prices, unfortunately, the conflict here in Washington continues to put us into stalemate on many fronts. Just a couple of quick examples. The Farm Bill is a huge issue with regard to stability of food prices and the competitiveness of American producers globally. And yet we've been stalemated over the Farm Bill now for months. The Farm Bill will expire this next week, and we still don't have the next Farm Bill in place. My hope is that we will get the Farm Bill put into place rapidly and that we will only have to have a short-term extension. But again, we continue to battle in a stalemate position over critical issues like that. On the energy front, the same thing is the case. We have made some progress in the past few years in diversifying our energy portfolio, but the steps that we are taking are small steps, and they are steps that should have been taken a couple of decades ago. And the reason that Congress took so long to taking these actions to diversify our energy portfolio is, again, because we have such a strong disagreement in Congress over how we should move forward. And that disagreement has resulted in stalemate for far too long. I'm sorry that that answer is not a very positive answer about the potential for the future, once again, I think it highlights the fact that Americans need to be engaged and letting their members of Congress know how they believe these important issues should be resolved. That will help us to break the stalemate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Dave. Are you still with us?
Okay, it's Susan filling in for Dave.
Yes.
He had a question about daylight saving time. He said that there have been some studies that have indicated that it doesn't save the kind of energy that it was originally intended to do, and why is it that we end up going through this exercise every year?
Well, you know, Dave, you've stumped me. I'm not aware of those studies. I'll have to go check them out. But certainly, if the studies do show that we don't gain the benefits that we intended to achieve from the daylight savings, we ought to revisit the issue. I did note that on a chart that I was looking at in one of the magazines that I was reading last week, that there are a number of places in the world that do not engage in daylight savings processes, and there are a number that used to but don't do it anymore. So clearly there is some dynamic development globally with regard to whether the daylight savings approach is being totally accepted and supported. And I guess the best I can say is I'll go back and read those studies and see if there's some reason we should readdress the issue. All right, next, Jason Ford.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jason.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your efforts to put the county payments in the budget outline.
Yes, definitely. I think that people across Idaho are very, very aware of the fact that the Secure Rural Schools budget is not funded right now, and that jeopardizes significant resources for our counties that are critical to our schools and roads and other county responsibilities. We have had a battle over the last couple of years to get the funding for the Secure Rural Schools program in the budget, and we face that same dynamic this year. The success that we were able to get last week is that Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon and I were able to get language inserted into the coming budget to basically set up a blueprint for how we can get that funding. It establishes a reserve fund, and then provides that if the reserve fund is funded by the appropriations process, then the Secure Rural Schools process will be, for one more year, protected from that loss of revenue. Now, the getting it into the budget, as we have done, does not get the funding for it yet, and that's the next big step. That step has to take place in the appropriations process, and we are still faced with the troublesome dynamic of finding a way to fund this by taking dollars from other programs. Now, we did that last year, and I'm very, very hopeful that we are going to be able to achieve the same result this year. Ultimately, I believe we need to get this funding online rather than offline, so to speak, and make it so that it is a part of the budget every year and does not have to be pushed into the budget in a way that forces us to push something else out of the budget as we move forward. Anyway, to quickly summarize, we do have the authorization for the funding in the budget, and now we have to work in the appropriations process to get the actual funding implemented.
All right, thank you.
All right, I'll check back. Is Bill Scott on the line with us yet? Okay, well, then I guess that covers it. I thank everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye.